This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. I have to go get Aiden. We are up at Legacy now. So summer obviously has started. Last week was the last day of school. And so we're taking them up to Fairgrove at this point, Legacy Learning Center. Good people up there, really good people up there. And they're good with him, and there's one gal in particular that she's kind of his special assignment, and so she just kind of goes with him and helps out. And so, yeah, it's a good situation. They're really very sweet, and they're good with him. I don't think we've ever been called and said, hey, you got to come pick him up at Legacy. They just, of course, the owner, if I understand correctly, the owner actually retired from Springfield Special Education. So, I mean, she understands kids, and she understands autism and all that stuff. And so, you know, they're very good with him. And they have the liberty, of course, they can be a little stricter with him and kind of push him towards, no, we are going to behave in a good way. And so he does well up there and seems to enjoy it because they play and, you know, there's no big schooling thing going on. They just play and have fun and they feed him and, you know, it's all good. It's just all good. So anyways, so I'm heading up over to Fairgrove. I'm going to pick him up and get him back home. And then we got to go in and swap around some cars because we're having one of the cars looked at. But we'll get all that done and just keep puttering along. I'm drifting back into the writing projects, although I haven't started writing yet. But this next week, I'm going to start editing the final version of book 24. In the meantime, this week, I have been working on getting the covers updated. So I have the first 8 covers updated at this point. And I'm kind of going by faith. I did print out the updated covers. And so I have seen it in subtractive color. At this point, for those of you who don't know, there's a difference in color when you print something and when you see it on the screen. What is happening on the screen is additive color, and what is coming out of your printer is subtractive color. I think that's what they're called. And it does make a difference. And so if you look at something on the screen and then you print it, a lot of times it's not even close. But there are ways to cheat. ChatGPT gave me a cheat to take an image, you get it like you want it on the screen, provided your brightness on your monitor isn't turned up too high. Obviously, there are more sophisticated ways to do that. You can get color, do they call it color balancing or color? Oh, what's the word? Color somethingerizing. Where you hang a little thing on your monitor and it goes color calibration, and it calibrates your monitor so that it will look on the screen like it will look when you print it out. And I used to have one of those, and then it died, and I just haven't bought another one yet. But there is a hack that ChatGPT gave me that's pretty close. You get a moderate brightness setting on your monitor, and then you get it like you want it, and then before you print it, you take the brightness up 50%, and the contrast up 15%, and then you'll get close. And so I did that, came out fine. So now what I'm doing is going through and rebuilding all the covers with not only the front and backs, but the spines. And of course, the spines are what has taken longer to get done. But I managed to convince ChatGPT to build spine images with the right width and the right placement to where I could cut them all up and put them on the cover and have a panorama for the first 8 books and then for the second 8 books, the third 8 books. So I have the first 8 books done, and I ordered author copies of those. And instead of just waiting to see those when they come in, I'm just barreling forward. Because I think they're going to be fine. I really think they're going to be fine. And so I didn't even wait to get those copies before I ordered a copy for my daughters. I just ordered them at the same time. We'll just hope. We'll just hope that everything is fine. So that's good. I did, as far as costumes go, I did do the World Goth Day. And it was good. It was good. It evoked a lot of questions and a lot of conversations, and so it was fun. I told the little stories, and everybody seemed to enjoy that. And so, and the castle turned out fine, and everything turned out fine in terms of all the engineering to get it on my shoulders. And it hung up well. I only had 2 accidents. There were 2 different times when I didn't get bent over far enough that I caught it on top of the door. But I was low enough that all it did was knock off pieces of the spire on top. And so the very, very top spire, I had already mentioned that I knocked off the spike off of that. And then there was a larger ball and a smaller ball, and then even smaller. I knocked both of those off. But aside from that, the castle did survive, and so it was good. About the only thing that was a problem was the back door was just sort of pressure fitted in. I didn't glue it in case I needed to get in there and do something with the lights. But as it turns out, I didn't have to do something with the lights. I will have to do something with the lights eventually because the batteries will go out. But supposedly the batteries in those little flickering candle lights last for 200 hours. And if that's actually true, I won't ever have to replace them. So we'll see. Because at most I used 8 hours on Saturday and Sunday, or Friday and Saturday. So I should be able to go for whatever, 20 years, if it actually lasts for 200 hours, which some of those estimates seem way overblown. But we'll see. We'll see. So, that was fun. It was good. People seem to enjoy it. I'm coasting now on the costumes a little bit. The next big thing I have to do is I just have to do some repairs on Mr. Potato Head. Because right now, the 2 halves of Mr. Potato Head that fit around me are just held with a lot of magnets. And the magnets aren't quite strong enough to keep it together if someone is torquing pieces in and out of Mr. Potato Head. Because it'll just pop off, and then it's heavy enough, it starts going down fast. So what I'm going to do is install latches on the inside. And that way, I'll be able to use the magnets to get it to snap into place temporarily, and then I can put the latches on so it will stay in place. So I'll probably put 6 latches on, 3 on each side, to keep it firmly in place. And then once I have it firmly in place, I should be able to rig up a little cart to drag behind me with extra pieces in it, and then I should be able to let people actually swap out pieces. So that'll be fun. So that's good. And then the next thing after I get that done is to start in earnest on Halloween. Unless something else comes up. We'll see. Unless something else comes up. Honestly, one of the other things that could come up is Marvin the Martian is just a monster. It's so heavy. And it's all torquing off the top of my shoulders. And oh, man. You know, I do have it bolted on, but people love Marvin the Martian too. So, In fact, Marvin the Martian was the thing that, contributed to me going viral at one point. Someone took a video of me in Walmart wearing the Marvin the Martian costume, and I think going through the whole thing of making Marvin the Martian mad. You won't like it when I get angry, you know, that whole thing. Because I have a string I can pull that makes Marvin the Martian mad, and then I have another string I can pull that'll make him happy again. And it all just comes down to this triangle that rotates down in front of his eyes. It's just that simple. But people got a kick out of it, and somebody videotaped me, I think, and put it on a TikTok. And I started hearing about it, that it was popping up on TikTok. And for, you know, multiple days there, people were mentioning it to me, so I don't know. It's fine. So anyways, that one I kind of have in the back of my mind. You know, maybe we'll do something different, because I have to get my arms stretched all the way out above me, you know, with 35 pounds, and then I've got to kind of duck under it and gently lower it back down on top of my head. So it's a bit challenging, but you know, we'll be all right. As you can tell, it is raining, so when I pick up Aiden, I'm gonna have to remember to take in the umbrella. Anyways, today I started listening to Brent Weinstein's interview of a couple that he had become very impressed with, because he was down in the Darien Gap with them. And he actually did a show from the Darien Gap with Michael Yon, is his name, and his wife is Masako Ganaha. And he recontacted them to talk about the paradigm that runs the world. And I'm glad I listened to it. It's interesting. It's interesting to hear people try to explain in a secular context the spiritual war that we are engaged in. And basically, the paradigm that runs the world, this couple, and probably specifically him, were confused for a long time about what he was seeing. He was in a country and he was watching the American ambassador make these bad decisions. I think it was Thailand. He'd make bad decisions about how the ambassador was relating to Thailand. And he said, for a while, in his words, he just thought, oh, it's got to be incompetence. You know, it's got to be stupidity. And then he said he came to the point where he saw it happening so often that he finally concluded, oh, it must be sabotage. It must be intentional sabotage. And once he decided that, he said everything started to make sense. And then he started looking around and seeing that same pattern in a lot of different things. And from that, he concluded that there are forces at work in the world that are globalist forces. And the two that they identified were the Zionists, not necessarily the Jews, the Zionists, who had their own ends in mind. And like the Chinese, the CPP, the Chinese something party, whatever that is, CCP, Chinese Communist Party. And he attributed all the things that were going on in the world to these forces that were trying to bring about destruction. And once he did that, he could make predictions. Like, for instance, he believes that there is a concerted move to destroy Western nations. And one of the ways you destroy Western nations is through waves and waves of immigration, uncontrolled immigration. and through famine, and through, you know, he listed them off. Well, he would then say, okay, if I'm trying to destroy this country, well, what am I going to do? And one of the things that he predicted early on was that the fuel supplies to Europe would be cut. And he was in, you know, in some big plant, and he was talking to them in Europe, and he said, so what happens if the Nordic pipeline, you know, from Russia is destroyed? And they said, oh, that'd be just horrible for us if that pipeline went down. And so he had actually bought a tablet to keep it on all the time to monitor the flows through Nordstrom, I think it was called. Monitor the flow through Nordstrom. I am here at Legacy, but I'm just going to finish this up real quick. Through Nordstrom, the Nordstrom pipeline, I think it was. And he said day after day, for weeks in advance, they were monitoring those flows to see what would happen. And he said one day, he said, you know, as he's watching, the flows go to zero. And he told his wife, the flows just went to zero. And of course, it was bombed. That's the one that, I think it was Nordstrom. That was the one that was bombed. And you know, basically he had predicted that would happen because in the way that he was thinking about it, that would be one of the worst things that could happen. And so it was obvious that that was going to happen if his model and paradigm was true. He also told a story about screw worms in down at the Darien Pass, because down in Panama, they've had a policy of irradiating flies that the males, that the females lay the larvae, which become the screw worms that are so detrimental to cattle. And he had told Brent Weinstein, you know, watch out for the screw worms, because that's an obvious another vector that they can attack that will cause problems for the U.S. And it was like a year later, somehow this population control program that they had going in Panama to control the screw worms had faltered, and then there were screw worms in Texas. The other thing that he had predicted, and this is just a few of the things, is he had said, well, if you're really going to flood the U.S. and Canada with immigrants, you really have to deal with the Darien Pass, because that's really the obstruction down there of getting South American people out of South America up into North America. And so there's some impassable places in there. And so he was thinking, well, if they're going to do that, then obviously someone is going to have to open a highway down there to get all these people across. And he said he was down there and he kind of knew, he had estimated where it might need to be going through. There's a little kiddo who's just dancing around in the rain here. He's as happy as a clam that it's raining. And so he kind of knew where it was supposed to be through, so he was kind of keeping an eye on the area. And one day, you know, he was wandering through there, and he's writing all this stuff down and publishing stuff as he's making all these predictions. He was wandering through there and he found a bunch of mud tracks that were, and he looked at it and he knew it was construction material, so he kind of followed it down, and someone was building like a 4-lane highway bridge across the Darien Pass. And their excuse was, well, the farmers, this helps them get their yucca root, you know, over to market. And it's like, you're building a 4-lane modern bridge across this little out of the way place, you know, so there's a lot of stuff like that. So it's easy from a natural context to listen to all of this and just say, oh, this guy's a kook. He has had a lot of success predicting things. But as I'm listening to it, I'm like, well, I think really what we're talking about here that he is pointing out and illustrating and may even understand, because they do sound like they are religious people, may even understand, and that is that there are forces for destruction in this world. And the thing that you can do is you can get yourself all tangled up in trying to figure out, well, You know, why would people do this? Why would people intentionally try to destroy things? You know, what's to be gained? Blah, blah, blah. What's to be gained? And what people don't understand who are just looking at it from a natural perspective is that what's to be gained is destruction. That's what's to be gained. And why would anyone be dedicated to destruction? And the fact of the matter is, this is a combination of the world, the flesh, and the devil. And there is a force in this world that is dedicated to destruction at very high levels. And it is flowing down through intentional planning, through principalities and powers and spiritual darkness in high places, and it's flowing into people via their flesh, and they might not even understand what they're doing. But they are being coordinated, maybe unconsciously, by those principalities and powers and spiritual darkness in high places. And that's why patterns show up that you can actually look at and predict. Because there is a concentrated effort, whether we can see it in the natural world or not, or believe it in the natural world or not. So from that perspective, you know, it was very interesting. The podcast is on Brent Weinstein's Dark Horse podcast. It's called The Paradigm That Runs the World. Michael Yan and Masako Gahana on Dark Horse. So anyways, you should check it out. You might find it interesting. Have a great weekend, everyone.